This is Elementary Greek Lesson 13, the imperfect tense with the omai verb. Vocabulary list. Apothenesco, I die. Biblion, ta, a book. Really the word means scroll, but it is the word to which has come into English as book. Daimonion, demon, that's a neuter noun, ta. Dunamai, I can or I am able. This is the verb form of dunamis, which is translated power usually in the New Testament, or it should be translated power. Ekbalo, I cast out, I throw out, I drive out, has a variety of meanings. Ekperuomai, I go out or I come out. Of course, that's ek, out, plus peruomai, I go or come. Euthus, immediately, that's an adverb. A, or, can mean some other things as well, but the most common translation is or. It is a coordinate conjunction. Thalassa, hey, a feminine noun meaning sea. Thronos, ha, a masculine noun meaning throne. We get the word throne from that in English. Katharizo, I clean, I cleanse, I purify. We get the word cathartic from that in English. Ude, and not. It's from u, not, and de, and not, nor, or not even. It is another coordinate conjunction. Ude, ude. The three dots indicate words come between the two uses of ude. It means neither, nor. It's a correlative conjunction. Un, therefore, it's a conjunction, technically, can mean then or now adverbially, sometimes. It's rather rare. It's usually used conjunctively. Un itself is used, there's a footnote, 523 times in the majority text. The inferential use is therefore is used about 200 times in the New Testament. That's the most common use. The temporal use, then or now, is used about 170 times, mainly in John's writings. The study of other uses of un must wait for second year Greek. Well, if you take second year Greek, you'll study those. The next vocabulary word, upo, means not yet. It's an adverb. Ute means no or not or nor as a coordinate conjunction. Technically, it means and not, because u is not and te is the word for and, or a word for and. But it's used simply in the sense of not or no, or nor. Ploion, ta, neuter noun meaning boat. Very common in the Gospels. Te, and, a coordinate conjunction that's weaker even than chi. It just barely is there. Te can be translated both and. Te chi can be translated both and. Those are correlative conjunctions. There are quite a few different ways that correlative conjunctions are used in the New Testament. The translations that I give you are the most common usage of those correlative conjunctions. Final sentence. It is time to review all vocabulary from Lesson 1 through Lesson 12. And I put in that little ditty, oil the furniture. Keep up with your vocabulary study. Paragraph 13.2, transitive and intransitive review. We've talked a lot about this, but we're going to keep talking about it. I warned you about this earlier. Each verb or verbal within a clause is either transitive or intransitive, one of the four following types. There's a chart here that starts on this page. Type of verb, transitive active. Its characteristic is these verbs are action verbs. They're not state of being. They're action verbs. The subject acts, which makes them active voice. In use, They must have a direct object which receives the action of the verb. Now that's the nature of the transitive active. Action verbs always can have the subject acting or being acted upon. If the subject acts, you must look to see if there's a direct object, in which case it's transitive active. If the subject acts, but there's no direct object, that verb is considered a complete verb. It's intransitive complete. So be careful about that. The second page, transitive passive. These verbs are action verbs. The subject does not act, but receives the action of the verb. Hence, such verbs have no direct object. Now, I footnoted this. There is a thing called a retained object. A retained object is a passive voice verb that has a particular sense that can retain a direct object. And in the footnote, I give you an example that is true both in English and in Greek. Let's read that footnote. There are a few instances of the passive taking a retained object. While rare, it does occur in the New Testament, but only when the sense of the verb allows it. For example, in 2 Thessalonians 2:15, we have the verb, the relative clause, has eridakthete, which you were taught. Now, the subject is the plural you. Notice the eta ending. That's the theta eta indicates the passive voice in this particular instance. You were taught. The eta is the te ending. That indicates the plural you. You were taught. So the subject is you. The passive voice verb is were taught. And it has the retained object, which is a relative pronoun. So teach is a verb in its various forms that can have a passive with a retained object. And it is used that way in both English and in Greek. An English example would be, the boys were taught tennis by the gym teacher. The word boys is the subject. Were taught is the passive voice verb. Tennis is a retained object. And the actor is by the gym teacher. So that's the agent of the action. So this is a rare thing, but I introduce it to you here because they do occur occasionally in the New Testament. And this particular instance in Thessalonians is one of those occasions. The third type of verb, intransitive copulative, these verbs are always state of being verbs. They connect the subject with the subject complement. Notice how that's spelled, with an E and not with an I. It doesn't mean to say something nice about a person. That's with the I. A subject complement following the verb. They must have a subject complement to be intransitive copulative. Intransitive complete. These are very common, perhaps one of the most common uses of verbs in language. These may be either action or state of being verbs, so they're much broader than the other ones that we've been looking at. They take neither a direct object nor a complement within their clause. In many cases, the subject of complete verbs is being emphasized in some way. Sometimes the emphasis is quite minor. We don't even think about it. Other times, it's more intensified, a little bit more intensified. So you have to look at the context to see. Paragraph 13.3, the primary and secondary omega and omai indicative mood verbs review. Here's what we've learned so far. The following chart shows all the endings studied thus far. It is imperative that the student master these endings along with their meanings, that is, how they're used, their person, and their singular and plural functions. Primary omega endings with omicron, epsilon, thematic vowels. And we've learned these. You should memorize them. O, ice, I, amen, ete, usi, with the movable nu. That's the primary set of endings. That means they go on primary tenses. The primary tenses are the future and the present. Primary omai endings with omicron, epsilon, thematic vowel. Omai, a, etai, amatha, estha, antai. Those are primary omai endings. Now, the omega set of endings on the left-hand column, those are used only on transitive active or intransitive complete verbs. Well, that's not altogether true. There's at least one verb in the New Testament that can be intransitive copulative with those endings. O, eis, I, amen, et, usi. There's only one verb that I know of that is regularly intransitive copulative with those endings, and that's the verb huparko, I exist. Otherwise, those endings indicate either transitive active or intransitive complete. If there's a rare occasion where another verb can be used as a copulative, it is very rare. I think there may be. We'll talk about that sometime later. The omai set of endings are used on transitive active sometimes, on transitive passive sometimes, on intransitive copulative sometimes, and intransitive complete sometimes. So they have a broad range of usages. Notice that I have also given you the infinitive form for both the omai and the omega endings. With the infinitive for the omega endings, ein, is either a transitive active infinitive or an intransitive complete infinitive. But with esthai, it can be all of the above. Usually it will not be transitive active, but it can be on a few occasions. Secondary omega endings with omicron epsilon thematic vowel. We've already learned these. They're used on what we would call usually past time or past tense verbs. On, es, e, amen, et, on. Part of polishing the furniture is to review the verb endings all the time. Now, I've mentioned this, I think, before. We're learning these with omicron epsilon thematic vowels. Sometimes these thematic vowels are called variable vowels because they vary from tense to mood and so on and so forth. They even drop out sometimes. So we're learning them this way because this is the regular form of these in the present tense or in the imperfect tense. There are also these endings. Secondary endings are also used in the other secondary tenses, the aorist. But it changes thematic vowel, which we will learn. Plus, there are other things that go on with those tenses that tense which we can see. The secondary omai verbs, paragraph 11.4. To the above set of endings, we add the following secondary omai endings with omicron thematic, epsilon thematic vowel. They are amen, u, eta, amatha, estha, anta. Amen, u, eta, amatha, estha, anta. Really zero in on these. They're used regularly in the New Testament. Now, since they are a secondary ending, they go with primarily past time verbs. Now, they are also related directly to the omai set of endings. So, they can be transitive active, transitive passive, intransitive copulative, or intransitive complete. They're used all four ways. More commonly, they're passive or sometimes reflexive. We've talked about that before. The old grammars call that a middle voice, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. There are a variety of ways in which these endings, both the omai and the amen, are used to vary the function of a verb. And sometimes they indicate reflexives, where we have to supply a reflexive pronoun. That's not terribly common, but it does happen a number of times in the New Testament. Sometimes they actually take an omega verb and change it into a passive voice, and you have to look for that. If you have a regular omega form and they have one of these endings on it, you have to ask yourself, why is the new ending here? And the answer is, oftentimes it's going to be passive, or it could be a reflexive, or it could be for some other reason. Sometimes regular omega voice verbs, that is the vocabulary form, has an omega ending, have a different meaning with either the omai, well, with the omai set, whether they're primary or secondary. And so you have to learn those as separate verbs. We'll come across those on occasion. You will, as you read through the New Testament. You just have to be aware of it. So, that is the four set of endings that are used in the omega conjugation. Now, there are two major conjugations in Koine Attic Greek. We've just learned all of the endings with omicron epsilon thematic vowel for the regular omega set of endings. That's the omega conjugation, which includes the omai conjugation. Now, the other one we've learned one verb in so far, and we will learn more as we go along. I think we've only learned one. Maybe I'm wrong here. I have to check that. But and that is the verb aimi, with a mi ending, mu iota. The mi verbs are a separate conjugation of verbs, have a different sets of endings. Fortunately, many of them overlap the omega set, but not all of them. So we will look at those when we get to that conjugation. So, next page. This completes the ending sets for the omega conjugation of Greek verbs. I just said that, didn't I? All subsequent endings in the omega conjugation will be variations of these four sets. And that is important. You don't really have to learn any more sets of verbs, of verbal endings. You just have to recognize the changes that occur. There are some major variations, but once you learn the vocabulary forms of these verbs, and once you learn the nature of the verb, you'll be able to recognize them. It takes time, but it's well worth it. Verbs with omai endings in the present also have omai endings in the imperfect. That is, amein, uata, amatha, estha, anta, the last set that we just looked at before. So they read, if it's like peruomai, I go, in the present, it's going to be eperuoth, amein, in the imperfect, I was going. And that's one of the major functions of that set of endings. It indicates the imperfect tense with the omicron epsilon thematic vowel. In fact, with the omicron epsilon thematic vowel, it's almost always imperfect tense. So, the following charts present the verb luo with the imperfect amein indicative forms. The student is encouraged to review section 12.5, which deals with the function of the imperfect tense. That's lesson 12, the fifth section of that lesson. Remember, verbs with the omai / amein ending are sometimes transitive, passive, or reflexive. Well, commonly they are. So, aluamein can be translated either I was being loosed as a passive, or you were being loosed, and so on and so forth. Or it can be, I was loosing myself, you were loosing yourself, etc. But there are times when it might be something else. But those are the most common, I think, for most omega verbs. That is, a verb that has an omega ending. Most commonly, it changes into either in passive voice or a reflexive function, which is not a separate voice. It's actually a kind of a truncated active, but we'll talk about that philosophically later. So here is luo with the amein endings. And this is going to be, if it's passive, I was being loosed. Elu amein, elu u, elu ata, elu amatha, elu estha, elu anta. I would go through those a number of times if I were you out loud, and I would keep doing it for the rest of your life. That's the way I kind of worked at this, so I keep doing it even today. Now, remember the imperfect of echo, I have or I am having? Well, here's a review of it. You have to keep reviewing. I keep putting this in here because review is the key to learning the language. Icon, ikes, ike. Icomen, ikete, icon. That is the I was having, you were having, and so on. That's just the regular way it's done. That's a weird thing. It's an irregular verb. Echo is one of those strange, strange verbs in Greek. It is not regular at all. It's one of the few verbs that is so irregular, you just have to learn its irregularities. It even has a form that's got a rough breathing instead of the smooth breathing. So it's just a very strange duck. I keep having fun with that. I keep looking it up for different verses and so on. 13.5, the use and diagramming of conjunctions. Conjunctions connect two grammatical elements. When two elements of equal force are connected, the conjunction is called a coordinate conjunction. Such conjunctions are compound. Constructions are compound, connecting two things of equal weight. Actually, you can even add to that. Sometimes it's three things, but each one will have an and between it, for instance, or an understood and or, and sometimes no and or. But when you have an and, a chi, or a or a te, and so on, all by themselves, that's a coordinate conjunction. A sentence can have compound subjects, compound predicates, that's verbs, compound direct objects, compound subject complements, compound prepositional phrases, and even compound subordinate clauses. So far, we've learned the following coordinate conjunctions. These are the most common. Chi, and, Allah, but, de, and, a little bit weaker than chi, and but, a little bit weaker than Allah, ude, and not, nor, or not even, te, and, un, therefore, usually, it can be then, or so on and so forth, a, or, and by the way, it has some other translations too, but that's the most common one, ute, nor, and say, ute, ute is neither, nor, as we will see in a moment, or further down. Now, we will study, this is the next page now, we will study the function and diagramming of subordinate conjunctions beginning with hati in section 13.6 below. So we're going to be looking at that. Now here's an example of coordinate conjunction use. I'm going to translate this example for you and as we read it. Hi pros yukai, your prayers. Hi, prosukai su, the prayers of you, your prayers. Kai and hi, la. No, this is really weird. La, la, a, ma, sunai. Alms, the alms of su, of you. That is a word that I still struggle with. It doesn't occur very often in the New Testament. It's got a weird spelling. Ela. Ema sunai. Look at that. Ele ema sunai. Hard to pronounce. Su. I guess if you grew up in the language, it would be easier. You'd hear it a lot. The verb is anabasan. Ice. Mne ma sunan. Memorial. For a memorial. Oh, anabasan. Went up. It's the aorist form, the past tense form. They went up. Manema sune sunan, a memorial for a memorial. Ice for a memorial. Enopion, before God or in the presence of God. Enopion means before in the sense of in the presence of, and that's from Acts 10:4. Now here we find a simple compound subject. Hi prosukai, su, kai, hi, ele, a, masunai. I trip over that every time I try to pronounce it everywhere, out loud. And here is the diagram of it. Notice the compound subject, prasukai and elemasunai. They are prayers, the prayers of you, your prayers, and the alms of you went up, ane, beson, went up for a memorial. Mene, masunan, it could also mean a tombstone, I think, or a marker, but it means a memorial. Enopion theu, before God, in the presence of God. Notice that the word God has two in front of it in that particular instance, referring to God the Father, probably. And then I've parsed the verb for you. It's an aorist. We haven't studied the aorist yet. Intransitive complete. Notice that it has a subject, compound subject, but there's no direct object, and there's no complement. It can't be a complement because it's an action verb. It's from it's the plural form of anabino in the aorist, the third person plural. It's indicative mood. We haven't studied the moods much yet. A special kind of coordinate conjunction is the co-relative conjunction. It's still coordinate. It connects two things of equal weight, but it's co-relative. A co-relative conjunction consists of two words separated by other words. We have studied the following correlative conjunctions. That's the definition, by the way, of a correlative word conjunction. It is two words separated by other words. And so we've learned kai, kai, both and, ude, ude, neither nor. Ute, ute can also be neither nor, I think. Men, de, on the one hand, on the other hand. Te, te, both and. Te, kai, both and. Now I want to talk a little bit, just briefly, about mende. Sometimes, depending on context, mende are a difficult set of conjunctions to translate. They're very difficult. When the above translation does not fit, and sometimes on the one hand, on the other hand, doesn't really fit very well, try leaving the men untranslated and translate de, and, or but, just as it normally is. There are a variety of uses, and when you get into second year Greek and when you start looking in lexicons at these correlative possibilities, you will find that there are more than one translation. These are the most common ones and the ones that I would recommend that you try first when you're doing the translations. But if you have a good lexicon, sometimes you really have to do some study to figure out what these things are doing. And that's kind of fun, actually. I like lexical work, personally. Sometimes, depending on context, mende are difficult to translate. It's as simple as that. Now, I'm going to give you an example of mende or te kai or some other things here. But these are not, these I have to translate for you, and because you haven't learned the vocabulary yet and you haven't learned some of the forms. So we'll translate them for you. But the idea here is to learn the structure and see how things work. Let's start with aneuron, te, mariam. Mariam is Mary. Kai, tan, Iosef. Iosef is Joseph. So aneuron is they found te, mariam, both, Mary, kai, and, tan, Yosef, kai, and, ta, brephos, that's the infant, the baby, kaimenon, and this is kind of strange, it refers only to the baby, lying, in, te, fatain. Fatain is translated manger, it means a feeding trough. But the important thing here is they found both Mary and Joseph, that's a correlative conjunction, and the baby. So you can actually add some other things to a simple correlative as you have here. And this is taken from Luke 2:16, which I just happened to be looking at here not too long ago, because I'm doing this in January and I'm just looking at it for Christmas time. So Luke 2:16. Notice the outline of the diagram. The word there comes from the ending. That new is the new of Remember, on es amen et on is the they plural. It's the third person plural in nu. It has an alpha instead of an omicron thematic vowel, but it's the same ending. They found is the actual meaning of that word. They found both Mary and Joseph and the baby. And it was the baby. Notice that diagram, the baby was lying in the manger. Lying is a participle. We haven't studied participles. It's diagrammed on a stilt because of that. And in fact, that stilt is the indicator of a verbal other than a regular normal finite verb. All verbals, participles, and infinitives, and all clauses other than main clauses are diagrammed on stilts. I parse the verbs for you. The first one, anuron, is an aorist, transitive, active, third person plural from anurisco. Anurisco is from heurisco, I find, plus on, it's an intensifier. Indicates they were probably searching for them. The second verb is actually a participle, kaimenon, and it is present, intransitive, complete participle. So participles can be intransitive active and intransitive copulative and intransitive complete. Anything a regular verb can be. This particular one is nominative. Participles always have case. Singular, they have number, and it's accusative because they are adjectives, and like all adjectives and all nouns, they can have case. From kaimai, that's the verbal form, and notice it's one of those my, omai ending vocabulary forms. So, there is a diagram that that helps structuralize a correlative conjunction. Diagramming the hati clause. When two clauses of unequal grammatical weight, that is a main clause and a subordinate clause, you have to have a main clause in order to have a subordinate clause, otherwise it's not subordinate to anything. When you have a main clause and a subordinate clause are connected, the conjunction is called a subordinate conjunction. The subordinate conjunction hati is special, as it regularly connects two different kinds of subordinate clauses to the main clause. The subordinate noun clause and the subordinate adverb clause. When hati is translated that, which I think is probably its most common translation, but I'm not sure about that. But when hati is translated that, it is connecting a subordinate noun clause to the main clause. A noun clause can function in any way that a noun can function, as a subject, an object, in apposition, or as a complement. In other words, a clause acts as though it were one word. It is acting as a single noun. Same as phrases. See, a phrase and a clause are similar in that regard. The phrase is a set of words without a verb that acts as a single word. It can be an adverb or an adjective, usually. Those are the most common. It could be, under certain circumstances, a noun, but that's very, very rare. Usually it's an adjective or an adverb. But participles, they can be almost anything. And we'll look at that. But also, hati clauses can be adverbial or they can be noun clauses. And so we'll see a lot of these functions. We have other kinds of clauses, like relative clauses, that are almost always adjectival. Possibly once in a while they can be something other than an adjective, maybe as a subject, as a noun clause, but usually they're adjectival. Now, here we have an example of a hati clause, and I chose this one because it's part of John's writings, 1 John 1:8, and I'm going to read it and translate it for you. Aeon is if, ipomen, we should say, it's the subjunctive mood verb of lego. We haven't even learned that yet. We'll have to learn it later on. It's an aorist subjunctive mood verb of lego. Hati, if we should say that, hamartion, sin, uk, ekumen, not we have. Now we'll smooth that out. If we should say that we have no sin or we have not sin, that really probably should use no unless you have a verb following, but we have not sin is acceptable. It's just awkward in English. Because uk is actually an adverb, as you'll see when we diagram it. And it's generally translated no sin as though no were an adjective, but it's not really. Notice that the hati clause is diagrammed on a stilt. And the aeon is a subordinate clause conjunction itself. This whole thing would be subordinate to a main clause. And it is in 1 John 1:8. It's subordinate. This whole thing is. But I wanted to just show you that hati clause is actually acting as a noun in this case, and very commonly in the New Testament, it's the direct object of the verb. It tells you what we should, if we should say something. What should we say? Is the thing being spoken or being said, that we have no sin or that we have not sinned. We have not sinned. Now, here are the parsings for you, and I'm going to not read those. You can read them yourself. But here's another example of hati. But in this case, it is very strange. This is an appositional use of the word, of the hati clause. This is also from 1 John chapter 2, verse 8. Verse 8 in a different chapter. The other one was 1:8. This is 2:8. I'm going to translate it for you as we read. Paulin, again, intelein, commandment, kine, a new commandment, grapho, I write, or I am writing, depending on how you look at that, to you, humen, a new commandment I am writing to you, hati, that, heis gatia, phagetai, the darkness is passing away, kai, and, there's a coordinate conjunction, ta phos, the light, ta alethinon, the true one, the true light, we would usually translate that, ede, already, phinai, shines, or is shining. We'll smooth it out. Again, a new commandment I write to you, that the darkness is passing away, and the true light already shines, or is shining. This is a partial sentence again, and it contains a compound hati clause. I thought this was ideal for this chapter. We've been looking at compound conjunctions. Now we can have compound hati clauses. This hati clause stands in apposition to the noun intelein. You remember apposition? A word in apposition or a clause in apposition can be either a noun, single word, or a clause, looks back at the noun to which it was in apposition and more specifically identifies it. So in this case, I write to you a new commandment. The hati clause tells you specifically what that commandment is, that the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining or already shines. Now, just for fun, I want to explain something to you about the word intelein. We've been translating that word correctly, so as commandment. That is the normal translation of it. It's translated that way in the King James and most other versions. But I will tell you that if you look at the hati clauses, they are not commands. A commandment in Greek does not necessarily mean a command. It may mean an idea to be understood and appropriated. It's a commandment in the sense that you need to know it and you need to appropriate the truth of it for some reason. And that's what we have here. It is sometimes thought that the word commandment, intelein, indicates ideas, precepts, or concepts. It's sometimes identified that way. The point is, though, that intelein does not always mean a command type of commandment. There are more than one type of those in Greek. I've also, again, parsed all the verbs, and I will let you read through those. It gives you all the information you need to know them. Now, right under the parsing, there's a sentence. When hati is translated because, it is connecting an adverb clause to the main clause. In other words, it's related to the verb of the main clause. It's an adverb. Hati adverbial clauses give the reason for the action, or maybe even for the state, of the main verb. Here's an example from 1 John 2:13. Grapho humen, I am writing to you, nean niskoi, young men. By the way, nean niskoi is a direct address, and we'll see how it's diagrammed. Hati, because nenin, I always do that with this verb, ne nekate. It's a perfect tense, and the ne is attached to the front of it to indicate perfect tense. Ne nekate, it's called a reduplication. Ne nekate, you have overcome Tan Paniron, the evil one, meaning Satan. I am writing to you, young men, because you have overcome the evil one. Notice in the translation beside the Greek there, I put commas before and after young men because they stand alone. They're not part of the actual clause there. They are an expletive known as a vocative. Notice how I diagrammed it on the next page. The main thing I want you to notice is that the hati clause is diagrammed under the verb because it's adverbial, telling why I write. I write to you because you have overcome the evil one. Neoniskoi is direct address. It's called a vocative in Greek. It indicates to whom the speaker is writing. The writer is writing. I am writing to you, neoniskoi, young men, because you have overcome the wicked one, or the evil one is probably a better translation. So, hati clauses can be either can either be noun clauses or adverbial clauses. Now you have some exercises, and I will leave you to those. Any help that you need, I will be glad to give you. Just give me a call, drop me a line, something like that, and I'll be glad to help you. This ends lesson 13.